Barry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told, and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Good afternoon, story lovers. Welcome to Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Stosh Silkowski
and Fanny Crawford,
your storytelling co-hosts. Today we will be telling stories of romantic repercussions. Yes. What are the consequences, results, effects, and outcomes of romance? The music you heard at the beginning, the opening, is Tarry Here, played and sung by Andy Offit Irwin, one of the top storytellers in the country, famous whistler and
symphonic
actor.
Symphonic whistler.
Yes. So, Fanny, are you ready to tell our first story?
Already?
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Sure.
Do you have any other news?
Well, I do, but we can hold the news back a bit. Thank you. I'm going to tell a tale called The Mermaid from the African-American folktale tradition. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Go? Okay.
I can't wait to put my toe in the water.
Back in the days of sailing ships, before there were steam-powered ships and nuclear-powered submarines, you could cross the Atlantic Ocean on ships with huge white sails. And the ocean around Savannah, Georgia, was 15 feet deep, and there were mermaids in those days, beautiful women with tails like a fish. These mermaids would swim up to a ship to listen to the men talking, working on the ship, and calling out to one another. If they heard the name of a person or the name of a thing, they would cry out and call for that person or thing by name. The mermaids had their own special magic. If they called for a thing, you had to give it to them. If you didn't, you'd be in deep trouble. The mermaids could capsize the ship right then and there. Plenty of men died on ships overturned and sunk by mermaids back in those days. Well, after a while, the ship captains learned to change all their men's names to objects they had on the ship. This man might be called Hammer, and that one would be Water Barrel. Another one, Axe. If the captain or the first mate wanted a man to do something, he'd holler out the made-up name. You there, Mr. Hammer, go on deck and check the mainsail. Or, you there, Mr. Barrel, go stoke up the stove in the galley for the cook. Well, when the mermaids heard those names, they'd cry out, give me that hammer, or throw me that Mr. Barrel. But the captain would fool them, because he would just throw an actual hammer overboard, or a barrel, as the case might be. They just had to make sure there were plenty of spare tools and supplies on board to throw the mermaids when they called for some of them by name. Well, there was a certain ship's captain. Let's call him Captain Squid. Captain Squid was a white man, but the ship's carpenter, the man responsible for maintaining and repairing the ship's wooden hull and deck, the sailing masts and the yards. Those are the crossbars attached to the tall masts that held the sails. The carpenter was responsible, in other words, for all the wood on a wooden sailing ship, a very important position, as you might well imagine. The carpenter reporting to Captain Squid on this particular ship was a dark-skinned man born in Africa. On board ship, he was generally called Sam. Now, that was not the name he was born with, but he had worked as a sailor since he was a small boy, sometimes on ships owned and led by other Africans, sometimes by white men. And he had been called Sam for a long time. Now, Captain Squid had a lot on his mind. He did not always remember the mermaid safety rule I mentioned earlier, remembering to change the names of the crew to objects they had on the ship. One day, Captain Squid forgot and shouted out, "You, Sam, climb the rigging and check on those new yard arms. See how they're holding up in all this wind." Sure enough, right away, a mermaid called out, "Give me that, Sam!" Well, they didn't have any tools or other things on board named Sam. Only the man called Sam. Captain Squid could think of no alternative. He couldn't risk refusing that mermaid and possibly causing the drowning of all the men on board, himself included. He did apologize to poor Sam as he threw him overboard to the mermaid. Soon as Sam hit the water, that mermaid grabbed him. And this mermaid had beautiful hair, thick and black, so long and curly that she could wrap Sam up, completely covered in her hair. She did it so well and so fast, he didn't even get wet. She swam so fast, she arrived at her home on the bottom of the ocean before Sam had a chance to draw a breath. When they reached her home, she pulled him into her house and unwrapped her hair from all around Sam. She looked him up and down and said, "I guess you'll do. Do you like fish?" Now, Sam was not born yesterday. He answered right off, "Oh, no, not for eating. I wouldn't even cook a fish." The mermaid said, all right, then. We'll marry right away." And so they did. Now, the mermaid's house was a fine house built right into the wall of the sea. The same way an alligator builds his house, digging out long rooms in the dirt. Not very high rooms, but 20 feet long or more. But unlike the alligator's house, the mermaid's house was full of beautiful furniture imported from all over the world. Well, Sam did like that house. He liked living in that house, but he did not like the food. Of course, he wouldn't eat fish, so he concentrated on the seaweed and the sea kelp and other kinds of sea plants. These foods did not quite agree with him. Too salty from that salty ocean water. In short, the food in the mermaid's house left much to be desired from Sam's point of view. Sam did not leave the house much, but whenever he did, he was quickly surrounded by mermaids, and not just two or three. Sam was a handsome man, and there were not many men about at the bottom of the ocean, so many mermaids stopped to chat with him. One mermaid in particular, a friend of Sam's mermaid wife, began to drop by their house to say hello to Sam. "Hello, Sam." Now, Sam's mermaid wife was not pleased when she noticed all the attention Sam was getting from her flirty friend. Sam's wife was not a shy mermaid, not at all. She immediately confronted the flirty friend, really now the ex-friend, and told her to stay away, never return, and most importantly, to stay away from Sam. The flirty friend did stay away, but she was only waiting for an opportunity. She had already decided if she couldn't have Sam for herself, then no one would. The day finally came when she saw Sam out on his own. She swam right up to him and said, "Don't you miss your home? Don't you want to see your friends and all you left behind on land?" Well, he had to admit he did. And that mermaid wrapped him up in her hair, swam fast to the edge of the sea, pushed him up on the land, and said goodbye. It did take Sam some time to get his bearings and find his way home again. But after that, he gave up the sailing life and became a land carpenter and a wood carver. He'd sit in front of his little house by the sea, carving beautiful curly-haired mermaids with long, dark hair out of old driftwood, and full-size mermaids from old tree trunks. That was a long time ago. But I did hear from folks who lived near him that he became a rich man. People would come from miles and miles away to buy his wooden mermaids, to decorate the prow of a new ship, or to sit on a parlor mantel just for company.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful story, and I'd never heard that.
The original version is a little more risque. You wondered about that.
No. Let's see. I'm not sure how to say anything about that.
Okay, then.
Mermaids and men. The whole idea sounds a bit risque and scary.
You think I can tell that story to children?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think they'd like it very
that,
much.
That was my rehearsal.
I think the children would like that story very much.
Well, there was no doubt they would like it, whether or not the adults in the room will also like it. I'm not quite sure about that.
Well, if you're going to be telling to children, I don't think you should think about adults.
Okay, then.
The audience is what counts.
All right, well, I'll make sure I...
And there's nothing wrong with that story. No one could be offended by the story. I can't imagine why.
Okay. Well,
especially since he's so nice and says he doesn't like to eat fish, which is would be a terrible inconvenience.
So if there are fish in the room, they will also not
appreciate that.
That's right.
That's a delightful story.
Thank you, Stosh.
Really, and it's an that's an African folk
it's
tale.
It's an African American folk tale, and I'm gonna. After you tell a story and we do some calendar updates, I have a little bit of a story to tell that's kind of background information for that story about the teller who's most well-known for telling that story.
Hmm. Well, I think we can do a station ID. You're listening to enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Stacy Olkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your storytelling co-hosts. And today we're talking about romantic repercussions. And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not so good.
But the stories are always good.
The stories are always good. So would you like to mention stories in the round?
Sure. And I even have a bit of an update. I don't have the full roster confirmed yet, but I know that on March 26th, Stories in the Round will open Season 5 at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike, just a mile west of the 81 interchange off of Salem Avenue. And we're going to open with another two-person performance, a play that you and I are going to present.
Yes. A Broadway play.
Yes, that's right. And I've been hearing from some of our audience members who were there for Adam and Eve back in December, and people keep saying, we should do another play, we should do another play. So that's what we're going to do, right?
Yes. Yes. And I promise them a wonderful evening.
Well, of course.
And with some laughter and... remembrances and maybe even a few tears.
All right. And we're going to be doing Love Letters, which is a play that was written by A.J., sometimes called A.R. Gurney. I've been researching him since we're doing this play. And he was quite the playwright back in the day. And this story is somewhat, the story that he wrote, the play that he wrote, is somewhat autobiographical, I believe. But I think it's particularly appropriate to stories in the round. First of all, it has a kind of a social responsibility message, but also a lot about relationships and the difficulties of being yourself and getting along in the world around you. And certainly storytellers investigate that theme quite a bit. And so this play certainly fits in that mode. Beyond that, it is a chance for you and I to stretch our wings a bit. Although you are such an experienced theater person that I'll be the one stretching my wings most of the time.
I like to think of it as an old theater person.
No comment.
Longevity.
Peanut Wagon. So that's on March 26th at 7 p.m. And if you want more information about tickets, registering in advance, or you want to share that information with your friends and family, I can email you the details. You can call me at 301-730-1638 or email me at Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com. And the other update I wanted to do is that for April, on April 23rd, I should double check that date. It's the fourth Monday of the month, almost always the fourth Monday of the month. We will have Susan Gordon returning with brand new material. She's going to do several new stories, and she's bringing some of her own poetry with her, some of her newly published poetry books. But the focus will be on storytelling, and I'm pretty excited. You and I have both heard some of these stories, Stosh. She's been working on animal stories, dog stories, and of course, all of Susan's animals are really people when she tells their tales.
Yes, and she is a wonderful storyteller. I actually met her at a workshop in West Virginia, and we had a meal for a group of people that were doing the workshop the evening before the workshop.
This is a long time ago.
A long time ago, and we had the meal at a winery. And they announced that there was an open mic after the meal, and anyone could sign up to perform. Well, someone did some music, which is a very good young man, and I had signed up, and Susan signed up, and I didn't even know her at the time. But I just fell in love with her storytelling, and she's a wonderful person. She told a very amusing story about the Towson area in Baltimore and how she had let some animals loose and was following them. And anyway, it was very involved, but it was a very humorous story. And I've been with her a number of times at other workshops now. She's a good friend.
Yeah. And Susan's animal stories definitely go back to her childhood. I think some of her earliest memories are about
that
the animals.
That was a story about when she was a young teen.
Yeah. Is that when she ran away from home? Is that story?
I think it was.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite Susan Gordon stories. So that's April 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church outside Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike. And again, you can get more information about the stories in the round and the 10-month series that we'll be doing this year from March through December. My phone number, Fanny Crawford's phone number, is 301-730-1638, and my email address is fanitsky@hotmail.com.
Well, that's great, bringing us up to date. So, what would you like to do next?
Well, you could either give the speak calendar, or you could... I think you should tell a story.
Okay,
into the program.
I will tell a story. I will tell one of my absolute favorite stories. And this is an Apache legend. And I'll point out that I am not an Apache. And there are some people who think only Native Americans should tell Native American stories. However, a lot of other people will tell you, and I agree with them, that if we don't share stories from other cultures, those stories may die. And so I am telling this because I love the story, and I think it's a wonderful, almost poetic tale. And I don't claim any relation to the Apache tribe. Although I, at times in my youth, was called a wild little Indian, which was one of those terms that old people used when back in the 40s and 50s. Listen, what is that sound? There are many explanations. Some say it is the wind blowing through the trees, but we know the truth. A long time ago, many people lived in the valley. They came from far and near. And each year, there was a special dance dedicated to the idea of having the young people come together and meet others from different places and different tribes. These dances were arranged by the women of the village. They chose the day, and once one of these dances was chosen to be a hoop dance. The evening finally arrived, and during the hoop dance, it was noticed by many that one young girl and one young boy seemed very interested only in each other. They didn't dance with anyone else. They never changed partners. They only danced together. They talked between dances, and the boy said, "I play a flute." The girl said, "Perhaps when I go to the canyon to work in my father's field, I will hear you playing the flute. When I hear the song you play, I will place a leaf in the river that runs through the canyon. And when you see the leaf, you will know I like your song." Early the next morning, the boy went to the canyon and played his flute. People working in the cornfields in the canyon paused and listened to his song. Some of them said, "That's the wind blowing gently through the trees. It sounds just like a song." The girl heard the song and liked it. She pulled a leaf from a tree and placed it in the river. She smiled as she watched it float away. The boy watched the flowing water, and soon he was happy to see a leaf floating by. He waded into the river and picked it up. He was very happy. He put the leaf in his belt and said to himself, "She likes my playing." The next day, the boy went to the canyon and played his flute. The girl went to the canyon and listened. The boy's song pleased her so much. She was happy. She placed a leaf in the water to let him know she liked his song. The boy waited anxiously as he played his flute, and soon he was rewarded when he saw the leaf. He quickly lifted it from the river and placed it in his belt. "She likes my song." Each day, the boy and girl repeated their actions. He was overjoyed and thought, "She likes my song each day. Maybe she likes me." And the young girl thought, each time she placed a leaf in the water, that he might know she liked his song and that she liked him. A few days later, the boy's uncle came to him and said, "It is time you learn to hunt. It is time you go with the men instead of staying here with the women folk." And so the boy went on the hunting trip. The young girl did not know that he was gone. Early the next morning, she went to the river and listened for his song. She waited and waited, but heard nothing. The next day, she got up earlier than usual, before the sun was up. She went to the canyon and waited and listened for his song. She did not know that he was gone with the men on a hunting trip. She thought he did not like her. She became sad. She became so sad, she became ill. Her family did everything they could to make her feel better. They prayed. They took her to the medicine man. He gave her special medicine and said special prayers. Nothing helped. She did not get well, and soon she died. It was a long and good hunt. There was much game to bring back to the village. As they rode back, the boy played his flute and thought how happy he would be to play for the young girl again. As soon as he was able, the boy went to the canyon and played his flute. He played for a long time. No leaf appeared on the water. It was afternoon, and he thought she was finished working for that day. Early the next morning, he went to the canyon and played his song over and over, but there was no leaf in the water. At the end of the day, he was very unhappy. What had happened? What had he done? He went to the village and looked for her. He finally came upon her brother. "Where is your sister?" he asked. Her brother looked down. With a sad face, he looked at the young man and said, "She became sick. Each day, she was worse and worse. There was nothing we could do to make her well. She died." The young boy asked her brother where she was. The brother took him to the place where they had buried her. Her brother left him there. The young boy took out his flute and played his song for her. Each day, the young boy went to her grave and played his song. Soon it was noticed that he had stopped appearing there. He had disappeared. No one knew where he went. He was never seen again. His family missed him very much. If you go to the canyon near the cornfields and listen to the sound of the wind blowing through the trees and watch the leaves fall into the river, you will know that the girl still likes the flute player.
Like the wind.
Yeah, I really, really like that. I bought a book with that story in it many years ago, and I had it in the bookcase and had kind of forgotten about it. And walking by it a couple of days ago, I noticed it and immediately decided that was a story to tell. And I like it so much because it reminds me of being very young and having a crush on a girl. And I know that many men have experienced that, and I'm sure women too. And that when you're young and there is a first love or a crush like that, it is very intense and very important. And if it goes away, it can be devastating. So, I like the story very much. It reminds me of my youth. I didn't play a flute, but I did like lots of girls.
So many things remind us of our youth.
Right. Yes.
That's a lovely story. Thank you, Smash.
You're welcome.
From the Apache tradition.
Yes.
I do have question,
yes.
I guess. I always wonder when I hear stories, it's particularly from Native American traditions, because there are so many stories of lovesick maidens jumping from waterfalls and Indian names given to places. that are often associated with stories. And I always wonder if that story, if those stories, those romantic stories, in the book that you found the story in, what was the, was there an explanation of who documented that story or how it came to the collection?
It was actually a single story book. It was like a picture book that was beautifully illustrated, and it was not an original story by the person who illustrated the book.
It was a
folk tale that was ages old, hundreds and hundreds of years old, and I've never seen a variation of it, but I have to admit I haven't done research to try to find one. And there are a lot of stories that have many variations of them, but this one just touched me, made me think of being a young boy.
Yeah, well, and I'd be interested in finding out through research or from talking to folklorists about that motif and the use of music to evoke the wind, and how many times that that theme comes up in other stories around the world.
And many Native Americans do have flute music in their culture.
Sure.
We just saw, I won't remember his name now, last year in the Speak Story series, there was a Native American.
Yes, I have that somewhere in my file right here. I will find that.
He played his flute and told a wonderful story.
Yeah,
a number of wonderful stories that night.
And I would also be interested to know how many times flute music is used to evoke the wind, not just in Native American stories, but in music around the world.
I think it's a natural connection.
Do you want to talk about the Speak Story series?
Speak Story series update. Yes.
Let me do a station identification here, because we're about at that time. Mm-hmm. You are listening to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. And your storytelling hosts today are Fanny Crawford and
Stasz Jelkowski.
So hang on, because there'll be more storytelling after these calendar updates.
Okay. The sixth year of the Speak Story series begins on March 20th with the Grand Dame of American Storytelling, Elizabeth Ellis.
Woohoo!
Yes. And if you're interested in stories in any way, I can't imagine any distance that is too far to travel to Shepherdstown, West Virginia, to hear Elizabeth Ellis.
Even those of you listening from Minneapolis and St. Paul,
yes,
or yes, Seattle, yes, you should come on by and hear Elizabeth.
Actually, my first experience with the West Virginia storytelling, the Speak Story series, and a workshop was to drive from Pittsburgh down to be in a workshop with Elizabeth Ellis.
Just around the corner.
Right. And it was it was well worth the trip. There's also, the very next evening, Elizabeth is going to do a workshop on family stories for the general public from 7 to 9. And if you look at the Speak Story Series website,
which is
speakstoryseries.com, you'll find information on that. And there is a small charge for that workshop, but it'll guarantee it'll be worth it.
And it's going to fill up really fast.
I know.
So people are interested.
On April 10th, Motoko will be there. A wonderful, wonderful storyteller.
Who uses mime.
And, yes. Mm-hmm. Who is trained with mimes and uses in her storytelling. And then May 8th, Robert Kikuchi Ngojo. Whew, I'm proud of myself there. he is one half of the storytelling duo Ethnotech, but he will be performing there by himself, another great storyteller. And then on June 12th, coming from Chicago, Scott Whitehair. I've never seen him perform, but Adam says he's wonderful.
Yeah, a whole different genre of urban telling and personal story.
And then on July 10th, another famous female storyteller in America, Dovie Thomason, a Native American storyteller.
Yeah, she has Apache blood.
Don't tell her I told that story.
She would probably congratulate you.
Yes. August 14th, Corrine Stavish. Have you ever heard her?
Yes, I heard her in Jonesboro.
In Jonesboro.
And in fact, I heard her tell a bit of what she's going to tell on August 14th, I
believe. Great. And September 11th, the grand man.
You were going to say old man.
No, I wasn't. No. Donald Davis. No, he's not old. He's not as old as I am.
That's true.
Donald Davis, one of America's absolute premier storytellers, will enthrall the audience. October 9th, Linda Gorham, another wonderful storyteller. And November 13th, the last month for the story series this year, November 13th, Megan Wells. And I have heard her.
Oh, I was going to say, I haven't heard Megan.
She was at Jonesboro last year.
I missed her somehow.
Oh, boy. Well, you missed the treat, and you won't this time. She is a marvelous storyteller. Just spellbinding.
Looking forward to hearing her.
I was frozen in my seat. People were getting up and leaving the tent, and I couldn't imagine why anybody was leaving. But it was over. So that's the lineup, and what a super lineup it is.
They've done an amazing job pulling these guys together.
Go to speakstoryseries.com and register. You can get a break on the price of admission by buying a ticket for the entire year.
Have you already bought your season's tickets?
Yes.
Oh, well, me too. Good.
Yes.
So I will see you there.
Yes. Yes. And I'll be there every month except the one in April.
Okay.
Because
we'll let you slide.
We'll be visiting grandchildren in Utah.
And grandchildren do take precedence.
And we'll even talk to their parents while we're there. So, that's the Speak Story Series announcement. Okay.
And, we have a couple other little calendar announcements, but we can save those for later.
Okay. So, are you ready to have another story for us?
Yeah, and this is not so much a story as it is the background information, but it does make a really interesting story. So, the tale that I told to open the show, the mermaid, comes from the African American folktale tradition, and it's been documented in different versions, at least half a dozen different versions from different African American communities across the United States. The storyteller who's most credited with telling and sharing this story was a man named James Douglas Suggs. Some people may say Suggs, but I've heard Suggs, S-U-G-G-S, James Douglas Suggs, who traveled through his life and lived in 39 different states, but towards the end of his life was pretty much a permanent resident of Southeast Michigan. He was 65 in 1952 when he first shared this mermaid story with a white folklorist. So he'd been telling this story in his own community for many, many years, and he'd had traveled so much and for work and moving from place to place that many people across the United States had already heard this story. But the first time he shared it with a folklorist was 1952, maybe 1953. And that folklorist was Richard Dorson, who worked with several different universities, but he's probably best known for the Folklore Center at the University of Indiana. And although Richard Dorson was most interested in the Southern tradition of African American folk tales, he was doing his documentation, his recording of storytellers at that point in Michigan, because it was closer in some ways for him at where he was at the time than traveling through the South, where it just would have been much more complicated for him. Dorson himself was born in 1916 and died in 1981. James Douglas Sogas was born in 1887 and died in 1955. So he did not live much past the time when his stories were collected or documented. Actually, I've learned from folklorists, documenting folk tales is a much better phrase than collecting, because it sounds like you're making an artifact of them if you're collecting them. And that they belong to you in some way. And of course, they always belong to the community where they came from first. But James Douglas Suggs, J.D. Suggs, was a gold mine of stories and traditional songs. And Dorson wrote several books. The two books that I know the best are Michigan Negro Folk Tales and American Negro Folk Tales, that were published in the late 60s, and I have one of those books here with me today. Because James Douglas Suggs died soon after his stories were documented, and Richard Dorson kind of lost track of him, they were still in touch for a few years, but Dorson did not know that Suggs had died in 1955, and he was still writing to him, but somehow the family of J.D. Suggs did not receive those letters or really know much about Dorson after he left the area. But in 1992, this interesting little kind of fairy tale ending to the story. Suggs had 12 children, but two of his daughters, Martha Suggs Spencer and another daughter, Toka Suggs, were still in the area. They still live in the area around Calvin Center, Michigan, and Vandalia, Michigan, which is where J.D. Suggs lived. And Toka was in the public library in 1992, and one of the librarians who knew her pointed out to her copies of Dorson's books, Michigan Negro Folk Tales and American Negro Folk Tales. And in those books, Toka and then her sister Martha saw for the first time their father's stories in print. Wow. And documented, and credit given to him for his experiences as a storyteller, and crediting him with those stories. And that particular mermaid story is not well known in the African American community, and it's not particularly well known by folklorists. So he should definitely receive credit and honors for his masterful telling. Martha and Toka Suggs then visited Dorson's Folklore Center at the University of Indiana. Now, Richard Dorson had died in 1981, so he was not there when they visited, but for the first time, they heard recordings of their father telling stories and singing. There were about 25 different songs that Dorson had documented from J.D. Suggs singing. And probably the icing on the cake was, the family was concerned. They were worrying whether these songs had been shared with J.D. Suggs' permission. Was he given credit during his lifetime for this work? And in Dorson's briefcase there at the university, they found a letter that he had written to other folklorists about his unsuccessful attempts to contact the family after he learned of J.D. Suggs' death. And all of this was a very emotional experience for the sisters, Martha and Toka Suggs. And in 1993, they initiated the Freedom Festival, their name for the event, in Vandalia, Michigan, to honor both J.D. Suggs, their father, and Richard Dawson. And that festival went on for years, and there is still kind of an affiliated festival that was held up until last year. I could not find anything about it scheduled for 2018, but it did happen in 2017 as a celebration of the Underground Railroad in Vandalia and nearby towns. And one of the highlights of the festival are the photographs of J.D. Suggs and Dorson together when Dorson was documenting the stories that J.D. Suggs told back in 1952 and 1953. So I just learned this information.
It's wonderful.
I've been telling this mermaid story for a few months, but I hadn't really done my homework. And so I thought I should know more about both Richard Dawson and J.D. Suggs. And in the book, American Negro Folktales, Richard Dawson does dedicate pages and pages to everything he learned about J.D. Suggs, the man, as well as the stories that he told. So it was quite an experience for me, and I'm really glad
That's
to
great.
Know this story.
I'm glad you did that research. That's wonderful. So, would you like to hear another romantic repercussion?
Please, I do think we have time for one more story.
We do. We have about 13 minutes, I think. So, this this is a true personal story, and I will reveal some things about my own life that some people will be amazed at, and others will say, who cares, or something. So, in the mid-90s, I met a lovely lady in a stage production, and in 96 we began dating, and we enjoyed each other's company so much that 2 years later, in 1998, on New Year's Eve of 1997, in Nashville, Tennessee, I proposed to her, and she accepted.
Aww.
She even wrote a song about it called On Bended Knee in Tennessee, which she does occasionally. So in 1998, in the early spring, I approached Father Jim, a wonderful pastor at the All Saints Church in Frederick, Maryland. And I had done a number of things at the church. I did some drama programs with very young children in the church, and we did some performances a couple of years. And he was pleased because the person that was doing it before I stepped in had a bit of trouble with keeping control of 45 to 50 children from the ages of about 4 to 10. And I did too, except that I pretended that they were all wonderful and we got along fine. So Father Jim liked that I worked with the kids, and he and I became friends. And I went to him one day at the parish, and I said, Father, I would like you to officiate at my wedding. And he said, oh, that's wonderful. And of course, he knew my intended bride because she had played music in his church a number of times, especially on Christmas Eve for a number of years. So he said, oh, this is delightful. I of course I will. And I said, well, I think you need to know something. I was married before. And he said, well, I knew that. I said, that's not really a big problem. You're divorced, aren't you? I said, oh, yes, of course. He said, well, that's not a problem. I said, but Well, actually, I've been married twice before. And he said, well, I can write a letter to the bishop. And I'm sure because of your work here at the church and with the children and your reputation in the community, I'm sure he'll give me permission to have that, to officiate at your wedding in the church. I said, there's something else. Oh, really? I said, yes. My future bride has also been married before. And he paused and said, actually, he didn't say anything at first. And I said, actually, she's been married twice also. And he looked up and smiled and he said, Stosh, I can't write that well. There's no way I can write to the bishop and ask permission to officiate at your wedding. However, and this is a little end to the story. On August 3rd, 1998, Terry and I were married by a justice of the peace at the town hall. And in attendance was her son Peter and my daughter Mara and Father Jim, who showed up to be another witness at our wedding. And I truly, truly loved him for doing that because that was at 11:30 in the morning, and he had to be in Baltimore by 1:30 to get on the plane. He was traveling to England that day.
Wow.
So, anyway, he actually told that story a number of times in small gatherings about his inability to write well enough to overcome 4 other marriages.
That's a wonderful story. I don't think I've heard that story before. So, I particularly like the part about the bended knee.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, we had a great time in Tennessee there. And we wound up when we bought an engagement ring that day. And we had a really nice adventure, that whole little vacation that we took.
What town were you married in?
Oh, we were married in Frederick
at the
courthouse.
That's right. Okay. I was thinking you said West Virginia, and I was trying to remember.
We were married in the courthouse in Frederick, and probably took about 7 minutes. was in an office, probably sort of like maybe a big bathroom, the size, you know. So, anyway, and it has been a wonderful 20 years.
It has been, at least the last few that I've known you.
Yes.
Well, we are close to being out of time, but I did want to do a couple calendar updates. These are wonderful stories today. Thank you, Josh. Stosh. I was talking with a friend last night about her son, Josh, and so I'm mixing up my Joshes and my Stoshes.
I've been called a number of things, including socks.
Socks?
A secretary.
Like
when I met Terry, and she was a school teacher, a secretary at her school for a number of years could never get my name right, and so she named me Socks, and I know today that if I would see that woman, she would say, ah, Socks, how are you doing?
So. Okay. Well, I just wanted our listeners to know that if you reside in these particular areas, we, Stosh and I, are both doing community storytelling for children's groups. And I'm going to let Stosh give you a few words about what he's doing at Greenbrier
Elementary on March 6th. I'm going to be doing 3 programs back to back, 3rd grade, 5th grade, and then 4th grade.
Science
telling. Stories about Galileo, stories about Niels Bohr, stories about things that fall, and lots of hands-on activities for the kids. And I've set up a program to where just a few of the kids will be able to do hands-on activities with me at the front, but I'm going to leave all of the equipment that I've built there for a week so that the teachers can let the other children try the activities and have some fun.
That is such a cool thing. Just, I can't wait to hear how that went.
It's just being the kid.
Okay. And then I will be telling stories for African American History Month, Black History Month, at the Robert W. Johnson Community Center in Hagerstown. There is a month-long celebration of Black History Month there for the after-school program. There are about 100 kids that come after school on North Street in the old African American school. It was high school and elementary school back in the day. And there have been different presenters coming every Tuesday to do Black History presentations for the kids, and I will be there the last Tuesday in the month for storytelling, and I'm really looking forward to that. Actually, I've been sitting in on the presentations and getting to know the kids a bit on Tuesdays this month, but I will get my turn to speak on the last Tuesday of the month. I think that's all. We have, I could tell people about Philadelphia. Okay, I'll be telling stories at Rose Valley, Megan Hicks storytelling venue in Media PA. And you can Google Rose Valley Storytelling if you want information about Megan's story series. Every month she has a different storyteller come. But I will be there March 3rd, which is a Saturday in the evening. I think it's 7 p.m. But you should check the website, or you could call me at 301-730-1638 or by email at fenitsky@hotmail.com. I'm going to close out.
Okay.
We are at the end of our time. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stash Hilkowski.
Your storytelling co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show, the Epic Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Tune in again next week at 12 noon for the Enlightened Storytelling Hour. You can also go to our podcasts at talltales.enlightenradio.org. And right now, stay tuned for John Coltrane. Bye.